All right, get this. Have you ever heard of a legal thriller? Like a real nail biter, but with millions of dollars and a corporate chess match.
Sounds intense.
Well, that's precisely what we're diving into today. The case is Reliance Electric Co. v. Emerson Electric Co.
Ah, I see where this is going. Section 16B, right.
You got it. This case basically reshaped how we think about that part of the Securities Exchange Act of 1934.
Definitely a landmark decision.
We're going to unpack how a rule designed to prevent, like, totally unfair profits ended up becoming this battleground for legal strategy.
It's fascinating how a rule that seems straightforward on the surface can lead to such complex legal battles. And, you know, this case still has ripple effects on how companies approach stock transactions even today.
Okay, so back to basics for a sec. What's Section 16B all about? What's the big deal?
Okay, imagine this. Someone buys a ton of stock in a company, then boom, they sell it within 6 months and make a huge profit.
Sounds kind of suspicious.
Right. The assumption is they might have had insider information, stuff the public didn't know, giving them this unfair advantage. Section 16B is like, nope, not on our watch.
So it's all about preventing what? Insider trading.
Well, not exactly insider trading in the classic sense, but more about preventing short swing profits. Profits that just seem too quick, too convenient, you know?
Okay, I get it. So how does Emerson Electric fit into this whole story?
So picture this. Emerson is trying to take over Dodge Manufacturing Co., but plot twists, it doesn't quite pan out.
Oh, what happened?
Dodge shareholders were like, nah, we're good. We'll merge with Reliance Electric instead.
So Emerson was left holding the bag.
Well, they were left with a lot of Dodge stock, a little over 13% to be precise, and they decided, hey, let's sell. But here's the kicker. They didn't just dump all their stock at once.
What did they do?
They got strategic, divided the sale into two parts. First, they sold just enough shares to drop their ownership below that critical 10% mark.
Sneaky. When did this happen?
August 28th. Then, just a couple weeks later, on September 11th, they sold the remaining shares.
So by the time of that second sale, they technically weren't a 10% owner anymore. They sidestepped the short swing profit rule.
Exactly. And that, my friend, is where the legal fireworks began. Reliance Electric argued, hold on, this two-step process is just a way to dodge the rules, even if Emerson technically followed the letter of the law.
So this case wasn't just about the money, right? It became about how you interpret the law itself.
You hit the nail on the head. It's a question that goes way beyond this one case.
This thing went back and forth, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. It ping-ponged through the courts. First, the district court sided with Reliance, saying both sales count. Emerson, you're liable.
Makes sense. What happened then?
But then the Court of Appeals reversed that decision, at least for the second sale.
Oh, so they said the second sale was okay?
Yeah, which basically meant the lower courts were stuck, couldn't agree. So, where do you go when that happens? All the way up. Supreme Court time.
High stakes. So what did the Supreme Court have to say about all of this?
Well, the majority opinion was written by Justice Stewart. He really focused on the precise language of Section 16B. Remember, it says you got to be a more than 10% owner at both the buy and the sell times.
And Emerson wasn't a 10% owner during that second sale, right?
Exactly. So the Supreme Court basically said, look, even if it looks like they were trying to avoid the rule, technically they didn't break it.
Wow. I mean, it does seem like a bit of a loophole, though.
It does, right. And the Supreme Court actually acknowledged that. They even said, and I quote, liability cannot be imposed simply because the investor structured his transaction to avoid liability.
Wait, so they're saying it's okay to find loopholes as long as you technically stay within the lines?
You can definitely see why this case caused so much debate. It's all about that fine line between what's legal and what some might consider exploiting the system. But hold on, there's another side to this story. We got to talk about the dissent.
Oh, right. There was a dissenting opinion in this case, too. What did they think about all this?
So the dissent, right, it was led by Justice Douglas. He basically argued that Emerson's actions, while technically legal, you know, totally went against the whole point of Section 16B.
They're like, come on, guys, it's obvious what you're doing here.
Exactly. They saw this two-step sale as like a carefully calculated maneuver to sidestep the rules.
So they believe that Emerson's intent was clear as day, even if the law's wording wasn't specific enough to like catch them red-handed.
Precisely. And they were worried, you know? They thought this ruling could create a loophole for other companies to exploit, kind of like a blueprint for how to get away with this kind of thing.
And that's a valid concern. I mean, it does raise questions about fairness in the market and whether investors can really trust what's going on.
Right. It's like they're saying, okay, you follow the rules, but did you really play fair? And that's where this case gets really juicy, you know, from a legal theory perspective. It highlights this tension between two different ways of looking at laws, what we call textualism and purposivism.
Okay, I've heard those terms thrown around before, but to be honest, I'm not sure I totally get the difference. Could you break it down for us?
Absolutely. So textualism, right? It's all about the plain meaning of the words in a law. Like, what do the words actually say? Judges who follow this approach believe they should just stick to the text, even if it leads to outcomes that seem to contradict the law's original purpose.
So it's like, don't read between the lines, just focus on what's written.
Exactly. And the majority opinion in this case was a classic example of textualism. They focused laser-like on the specific wording of Section 16B, even though it allowed for this loophole, you could say.
So sticking to the script no matter what, huh?
Pretty much. But then you have purposivism, which is all about the intent behind the law. Like, why was this law created in the first place? What problem was it trying to solve?
I see. So you're looking at the bigger picture.
Right. And judges who like this approach believe they should consider the context, the history, the whole shebang, even if it means going beyond the literal wording of the law.
So it's less about what the law says and more about what it means or what it was meant to do.
Exactly. And the dissenting opinion in this case leaned more towards that purposivist view. They felt Emerson's actions, even though technically legal, violated the spirit and intention of Section 16B.
It's like two different philosophies clashing almost.
Yeah.
Do you follow the rules as they're written, or do you try to understand the bigger picture and apply the rules in a way that makes sense based on their original purpose?
It's a great way to put it. And this debate, you know, it's not just theoretical. It has real consequences in the real world. Reliance Electric v. Emerson Electric became a landmark case precisely because it forced everyone, courts, legal scholars, everyone, to really grapple with this fundamental question about how law should be interpreted.
It's crazy to think that one case about a specific financial transaction can have such a massive impact on the legal world.
It really is. And it goes beyond legal theory, too. This case had a direct impact on how companies handle stock transactions.
How so?
Well, after the Emerson ruling, companies knew they could structure stock sales in a way that avoids triggering Section 16B, even if it looked kind of shady.
Great. It's like Emerson Electric didn't just win their case, they also won the right for other companies to use the same strategy.
You could see it that way, yeah. But it's also important to remember that the legal landscape is always shifting. There are other securities laws out there, like Rule 10b-5, which is more about preventing fraud and manipulation in the stock market.
Right, so there are still rules in place to stop people from doing whatever they want.
Exactly. And those rules are more about proving intent. You have to show that someone intentionally tried to deceive or manipulate the market. Section 16B, on the other hand, relies more on those mechanical rules about ownership and timing.
Got it. So even though Emerson found this loophole in Section 16B, they couldn't just go rogue and start engaging in blatant insider trading or anything?
Nope, not at all. And that's what makes this case so fascinating. It highlights the complexities and the nuances of our legal system. Something that might seem like a cut and dried rule can actually be open to interpretation and even strategic maneuvering.
So the lesson here is, if you're ever dealing with a complex financial transaction, especially anything involving stocks, keep Reliance Electric v. Emerson Electric in mind.
Absolutely, because it shows how even seemingly straightforward laws can have surprising implications. And it raises some ethical questions too, right?
For sure. Like, even if you know you can structure a deal to avoid legal trouble, should you, is it the right thing to do?
Exactly. It's a real dilemma, and it's something that lawyers grapple with all the time. Right. So let's bring this back to our listeners for a second. Imagine you're a corporate lawyer and your client is in a similar situation. Knowing this precedent exists, knowing how the courts have ruled, what would you advise them to do?
That's a tough one, right? It's not just about the law, it's about what's right. It's about, like, your morals and ethics. Yeah, it's like you're weighing the legal risks and benefits, sure. But you also got to think about the ethical implications. And of course, you have to do what's best for your client.
It's a classic example of those tough calls that lawyers have to make all the time, you know, where there's no easy answer.
Definitely makes you think. So when we step back and look at this whole case, what's the main takeaway? What's the big lesson here?
I think the biggest thing we can learn from Reliance Electric v. Emerson Electric is that even laws that seem crystal clear can have these gray areas, and sometimes they can have consequences that nobody saw coming.
Yeah, and it's a good reminder that the law isn't static, you know. It's constantly evolving, and the cases that come before the courts, They play a huge role in shaping that evolution.
It's like a living, breathing thing, right? Always changing and adapting.
Totally. This case definitely made us think, that's for sure. It raises all these questions about the difference between what's legal and what's ethical, and how companies navigate that sometimes blurry line.
It really does. And it makes you wonder, you know, how you would handle a similar situation in your own life. Have you ever been in a situation where someone followed the rules, like to the letter, but you knew they weren't really playing fair?
That's a great question. And it's a question for our listeners too, because it's those gray areas, those tricky situations that really force us to think critically about the law and how it operates in society.
And Reliance Electric v. Emerson Electric is like a perfect illustration of that. It started as this seemingly simple case about stock sales, but it ended up sparking this huge debate about legal interpretation, corporate strategy, and even ethical decision making.
It really shows that there's always more to the story, right?
Absolutely. The law is full of surprises.
So to everyone listening, the next time you come across a legal issue, whether you're reading about it in the news or dealing with it in your own professional life, think back to this case. Ask yourself, is this as simple as it seems? Or is there something more going on beneath the surface? Because sometimes the most valuable lessons are hidden in the loopholes.
Couldn't have said it better myself?